This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Finally, new rule. Liberals need a stand your ground law for cancel culture, so that when the woke mob comes after you for some ridiculous offense, you'll stand your ground. Stop apologizing. Because I can't keep up anymore with who's on the list.
Yeah, neither can I. And, you know, as today we found out that Dr. Seuss is, I see when these stories come out, I am losing interest in even finding out why they're being canceled. I'm like, you know, I didn't wake up today thinking about Dr. Seuss. I wasn't concerned about the racial undertones of the children's books that might exist in my kids' libraries. It hadn't occurred to me because that's not the way my kids read those books, and I'm pretty sure this is not brand new information. If we've got pictures of Michelle Obama reading Dr. Seuss in the White House, why is it now all of a sudden so terrible that these books need to stop being produced? Cancel culture is a cancer on our country right now, and it will continue to be until more people like Bill Maher there stand up and say, enough already. This is ridiculous. Mark Cox joins us as he does every day.
It's too much winning. We can't take it anymore.
We can't stop. It's too dangerous.
I'm the best there is at what I do.
And that's the bottom line.
Mark, do you ever feel like you just can't keep up with the latest horrendous thing that exists that's really existed for our entire lifetimes? It's just today all sounds bad.
Annie, I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam. I am. That was my favorite book growing up. One of the first books I can remember as a young child that I was fascinated by. And now we're told that some image the cartoonist drew when he put the books together 55 years ago, or however long it was, it's now unacceptable, and we must ban them. I mean, it's the silliest thing that I've ever heard. You have to stand by and wait to see what you're going to be outraged by next.
You know, I think when I watch, for instance, I'm thinking of some Disney movies that I've watched with my kids that are really old. Dumbo is one of them. There are some things in the movie Dumbo that have absolute racial undertones that really tell a story about what was acceptable at a time that is no longer acceptable right now. You know what that does? When my kids are of the correct age, it gives me an opportunity to discuss that with them. If you ban it, how are they supposed to ever know that this stuff existed before? And, you know, if something like that comes around again, you take away the context with which we can educate our kids on how to behave correctly and how to not behave correctly.
Well, same. You know, you're right. That's a great point. And I've thought about that before when it comes to statues being torn down or schools being renamed in San Francisco. I mean, they've really carried it to an extreme. I believe, was it former Senator Barbara Boxer had her name on a school out there, and they removed it. They voted to remove it. It was Feinstein, wasn't it? Yeah, they voted to remove it because she replaced a flag that had been damaged one time that had the Confederate symbol on it or something. Wasn't her flag. And that's why they chose to cancel her. I don't know where it ends. And I don't know where the common sense comes back in, because all of these places are happening in a vacuum of cities like San Francisco and LA and in academia, where they're deciding to suddenly ban images and books and thought that they don't like. Our founders must be rolling over in their graves.
Mark Cox is on with us from the Mark Cox Morning Show, 5 to 9 every weekday here on 97.1. Mark, I'm sure you've heard it before that today's liberal is tomorrow's conservative, that as the culture tends to drift or even move quickly leftward. People like Bill Maher, who we just played there, you know, they if they don't move, they end up further right of the middle than they used to be. So I guess my question for you is it encouraging when you see people like him out there saying things that you're like, well, I can agree with that? Or is it more of a reflection on the overall movement of things, which is depressing, that leftists are now, you know, authoritarian in their canceling of everything?
Yeah, Ryan, that's a great point. I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, Bill Maher said some of the most outrageous things I've ever heard in the past. And suddenly he's on the defensive because even his fellow liberals are criticizing him for things now. So, I mean, it gives you an idea. I just think we've lost control of this ship 20 or 25 years ago, and it's now ingrained in the colleges. It's ingrained in the, you know, secondary and schools to some degree. We have conversations with our children to try to prevent something like that from taking effect. But if there's not good parenting, there's not a chance of these kids not being sucked into this through peer pressure and everything else. There are going to be kids at school who think that, you know, the United States was founded in 1619 because of the name of the project by the New York Times. And if you disagree with that, as Josh Hawley brought up the other day at CPAC, you're labeled a racist.
Yeah, a scary name that once it sticks, it sticks. You know, I think about how cancel culture has come after so many different people. If the accusations are plentiful enough, you can be canceled. There's no trial. It's just the court of public opinion. And then you have someone like Governor Cuomo with a third accuser coming out today. He's got a sexual harassment scandal surrounding him that he might even be grateful for, because that's less of a concern from him than the nursing home scandal that caused the deaths of thousands of loved ones in New York State over the course of his handling of the COVID crisis. I mean, why is it that a guy like Andrew Cuomo doesn't immediately get canceled when the first, the second, the third, and however many other people are going to come out with accusations? Why isn't he subject to that?
Well, because he's knelt at the altar of political correctness so many times that he got a pass. I mean, where's Elizabeth Warren? Where's Amy Klobuchar and the others who were up front screaming with the protesters during the Kavanaugh hearing, who said nothing about Andrew Cuomo? Other than the fact that we have Cuomo on camera being highly critical of Kavanaugh, and now he finds himself in the same situation. And, you know, I saw Janice Dean, the meteorologist for Fox, point this out yesterday. How outrageous is it that he might end up being forced out of office over this hashtag MeToo movement, maybe, instead of the fact that he is at least responsible for the policy that led to 15,000 deaths in the state of New York? She's outraged by that. Mm-hmm. She's more outraged by the deaths than she is these latest allegations. But it may not be the deaths that force him out of office. It may be these sexual harassment allegations.
Yeah, and if the other controversy goes by the wayside, that will be its own tragedy. I want to ask you about the coverage of the Andrew Cuomo situation, specifically on CNN and specifically with Chris Cuomo. Chris and Andrew's little love fest, their bro fest that they had, you know, during COVID. It strikes me as interesting that they were able to be so playful and lighthearted during this crisis, which is something that was so heavily criticized of Donald Trump. They said that he didn't take it seriously enough, and meanwhile they're playing games in prime time every evening, I guess, to give the American people a lighthearted moment. Chris Cuomo covered that part of his COVID situation, but now, of course, he's not going to cover this part. I can't imagine how he could possibly cover it, but, you know, CNN has forbid Chris from being able to react to the situation. Doesn't that still obligate CNN, the rest of CNN, to cover it? And you expect any change here going forward as the story continues to get bigger?
Well, I heard his statement. You know, he's interviewed his brother before. He's been told him how proud he is and all that stuff of him leading up until now, particularly for his handling of COVID. You know, CNN has got, unfortunately, a long history of hypocrisy on this sort of thing, starting with Jim Acosta in the White House, right? And the way his treatment of their treatment of President Trump versus the just softballs that Joe Biden gets right now. So I don't expect any change. Now, Chris Cuomo would lead you to believe CNN is and will continue to cover this story. I don't watch CNN enough to know if he's telling me the truth or not. I imagine they're going to mention it to give it a little bit of window dressing and be able to look back and say, but look, we did report on it. But they haven't. They never investigated this story when it first broke about the nursing home deaths. They just didn't have any interest in it. The COVID served its purpose. They will continue to try to ramp it up, Annie, to milk as much political opportunity as they can out of it, the COVID stimulus bill. And once it's gone, it's gone. And that's why there's such an effort, I think, on the part of this White House. I saw one of their experts today saying, this is not over. Don't let your guard down. Don't let your guard down. You hear it from Joe Biden all the time. Even though the numbers are dropping precipitously as more people get vaccinated thanks to Operation Warp Speed. So there's no interest on the part of CNN or anybody else to tamp that down or to draw more attention to Andrew Cuomo, in my opinion.
Mark Cox, your answer intrigues me. So I'm going to ask you a tough question here. Is it fair to hold any politician accountable for COVID deaths, whether that be Donald Trump or Andrew Cuomo or anybody in between?
Yes, it is. If you can prove that it was their policy that led to it. Remember what Joe Biden, the candidate, said. That 400,000 people have died, and he basically blamed Donald Trump. It was all on his watch. He wanted to blame Donald Trump for all of the deaths from a pandemic. I didn't think that was fair, because he was listening to Anthony Fauci, who was telling us in March and April of last year, Americans don't need masks. You don't need to wear masks. And this is different, because Ron DeSantis took a lot of heat for the way he handled the COVID mess. Lord knows in Florida they have more elderly people than they probably do in New York State. And yet Ron DeSantis didn't have this problem. This problem is a direct result of the policies of Andrew Cuomo. So I think you can demand some accountability on the part of these politicians if the deaths are connected directly to their policy. I don't think that's a double standard.
Yeah, it's responsibility. At least you're leading. You have responsibility. You're going to get credit. Chances are you're going to get blamed, too, from time to time. Mark, before we let you go, I want to ask you now. I know that you are, let's see, I'm 107 days away from my due date. Your daughter is she early June? Is that correct?
She's late May. Thank you.
Late May. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I won't take a single day away from her, because I'm literally counting the days. I'm asking my listeners to share with me advice that people have given them or that they hear people repeat a lot. Maybe it's parenting advice or marriage advice. But I want to know the ones that you hear that you completely disagree with, and they can share that on our live chat. I'm curious, when you look at a grandbaby coming into the world, that looks a little bit different than when it's your own child, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of advice, what kind of good advice do you have for your daughter as she's entering into this parenthood thing that really, it changes everything, and it changes everything instantly? Now that you're going to be a grandpa, what kind of advice do you have for your daughter going into this life-changing situation?
Yeah, probably, you know, father knows best. Would that be a good one?
No.
Listen to your elders. Would that... I don't know.
I wanted the good advice from you.
You wanted some good advice. You know, I don't know. I probably
happy wife, happy back. Life is maybe a little bit more the
yeah, state. Yeah. That's probably a little better, isn't it? You know, I would kind of look back on that, entering this for the first time, and hope that I can just give a little direction based on the experience that I've had raising these three kids, to try to keep them grounded. By, you know, trying to give them a solid base in their faith, which I know that you and Jared have done, and so many people that we know whose children have turned out so well. That's going to be it. I will try, and I promise my wife to hold my advice, except in critical conditions, so that she doesn't feel like I'm overbearing with it. I don't feel like anybody did that to me, So I'm probably going to try to give her that grace at first.
I'll tell you, sometimes that advice comes just at the right time. There's nothing like that moment when you take that baby home for the first time. You've never done this before, and you just can't believe that they let you take this child home.
Yes.
You're like, should there not be supervision? And that supervision comes in the form of grandparents. So hoping for the best for your family. Looking forward to hearing that story. And the closer it gets for her, the closer it gets for me. So that makes me happy, too.
Same to you, Annie. Thank you.
Mark, thank you so much. That is fantastic advice. You really stuck the landing there. Mark Cox of the Mark Cox Morning Show, weekdays 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. right here on 97.1. I would love to hear from you. What is the advice that you keep hearing people say? Like, I could think of men, you may not understand what this is like. Katie, at bridal showers, at baby showers, do you ever do the thing where people like write down on a strip of paper a piece of advice or words of encouragement? Have you ever done that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of that advice is terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then
sure
you get here and you're like, wow, that was crap. Sounds really good on a Hallmark card, but let's be real here. I'm curious about these things that you've encountered in your life. And if you could put a spin on it, how would you refresh this common advice that people hear and maybe put a little reality into it? We'll talk about that when we come back with Katie and Ryan and you. Comment on the Facebook Live, comment on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. So the first piece of common advice that really actually sucks is sent to us on our YouTube channel, the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Brad said it, and I can't agree more. Follow your heart. Follow
what?
Your heart. You can follow your heart, but pretty soon you're going to be forced to follow your brain, and it's going to be preceded by a lot of brokenheartedness in the process. This is something that I think goes hand in hand with our conversation with George Leaf and that editorial in the National Review that we talked about at 1225, which you can check out of the podcast or on our app, radio.com, with the student loan debt. Like, follow your heart. If you want to be a liberal arts major, if you want to be, you know, a famous artist, that's probably one of those things that, you know, I like to talk about Dolly Parton lately, but that's a gig thing that you probably are going to need to invest in while you still follow your brain and get a 9-to-5, and then your 5-to-9 can be your art hobby or something like that. The idea of following your heart is a classic piece of advice that we give young people. You can't only follow your heart. Your heart can be involved in the conversation, but it can't be the only part of the conversation that exists, because you don't realize how much following your heart doesn't pay the bills. And you're not going to realize it until you're back asking mom and dad for money to help follow your debt and accommodate for the things that your hobbies do not pay for. I think that's a great one. Mm-hmm. What do you, Katie, do you have any that
I
you
have
can
so
think of?
Many. I have
what
so,
do you got?
I wrote them down on the break.
Lay them out.
Okay. First one. You'll understand when you're older.
Maybe not.
To this day, that was like the most annoying thing that an adult could say to you growing up when you were a little kid. But even right now, I understand the concept of, as years go by, I'm going to learn a lot of lessons and there's going to be a lot of hardship. Still don't want to hear about it. Still don't
so
care.
In that vein, Frozen 2, if you haven't seen Frozen 2, it's a great movie. I love that movie. I like it way better than Frozen, the first Frozen. When they screened that movie the first time, they realized that it came off super dark to the audience, and it didn't necessarily have enough silly stuff in there for the kids to lighten the mood throughout the course of this kind of heavy movie at times. And one of the things they put in there, they really amplified Olaf, who is the snowman. And one of the songs that he does in there is "This Will All Make Sense When I'm Older." And the whole song is about him going through issues in life and saying, well, obviously I'll understand this when I'm older. And the truth is that you don't understand anything really more when you're older. You just understand that there are things you can't control.
Mm-hmm.
And that bad things happen. And it's a lot easier to say to a kid, this will make sense when you're older, than, yeah, life sucks and it's about time you get used to it.
Yes.
What else you got?
This is one, Annie, you'll be able to relate to. Two of my girlfriends are having their babies really soon. Mm-hmm. And they said the
first babies?
First babies. Mm. They said the absolute most annoying thing that they hear from other mothers is enjoy sleep now because you won't get any once he or she is born.
Baloney sausage. That's baloney because I sleep a lot better when my husband's carrying this baby than when I'm carrying this baby. And I got to wake up every time to roll over because I have to resituate four pillows in my bed in order to make sure that I don't feel like the baby's going to come out at that given time. I remember people telling me that and being like, I really feel like I want to fight you right now, but that seems excessive.
Yeah. Both of my girlfriends are like, we just smile and like through our teeth, we're like, thank you so much for that advice because nobody wants to hear that.
It's really doom and gloom and it's not true.
Yeah.
The first time you get home and you get to sleep on your belly and you haven't slept on your stomach, if you're a stomach sleeper like I usually am, I like to sleep on my stomach with my arms, you know, folded underneath the pillow, and that's how I get the best sleep. I can't even begin to do that right now. So I'm not sleeping well. Mm. And then if you're like, wow, I know it sucks to try to sleep right now, but just wait. It gets worse. Nobody wants to hear that.
Words
Don't
of encouragement. That. Can't wait.
Yeah.
I have two
Tell
more.
Tell them to hang in there. It gets better.
I hope I'm not stealing these from people. Never go to bed angry at your significant other.
Yeah, I'm interested. Ryan, what do you think about that?
No, that's a bad idea. Go to bed angry all the time. Because if you try to talk about it in the moment, A, you're going to stay up way too late and be in a worse mood tomorrow because you're tired. And B, you're in the heat of the moment. So why have it out right then? Like, wait a minute. And then tomorrow you're going to think about it differently.
Taking space and taking a break is absolutely fine. If you need to talk about it, then you can say you need to talk about it. But like you said, Ryan, in the heat of the moment, then after that, after you resolve your problem, then you're going to have to talk about all the things you wish you wouldn't have said. Mm.
That was one of those, Annie, that I thought of right whenever you said, like, the advice people gave you at the bridal shower. I got so many of those tickets. And I'm like, I'm telling you what, Dave and I had been together, those little things. And Dave and I had, at that point, had been together for 7 years. And I'm like, we've had arguments and had to obviously go to our separate houses. And they didn't end pretty when I went to bed. We were still mad at each other the next day. Love you, David. And this is my last one. Someone out there has it worse than you. Oh,
ooh, that's a good one. I mean, that's a good bad one.
Yes. Yeah. There is nothing like being really mad or really upset about something. And the advice that the first person gives you that sees you when you're angry is,
suck it up.
Someone else out there has it worse than you. It's like, yeah, I know.
Does that
know.
Make me feel better? Is that supposed to provide encouragement? Like, well, I'm really glad that someone out there is suffering more than me.
I know. I live in a first world country. I know that there's obviously people out there doing worse than me right now.
When you're laying in bed and somebody moved your phone charger and you're like, oh, I got to go downstairs now. And I was all comfortable and all four pillows are where they're supposed to be for me to stay here and lay and wake awake all night. Now I got to get up and go. That's how I talk when I'm mad. I get really low voice. This is a Ryan Wiggins, Annie Fry voice.
That's right. Has he lived there? Oh, doggone it. I got to have baby.
You should do an audio diorama of me having the child. I don't want you to do that.
I'm gonna have the baby soon. I'm having the baby now. There it is.
That's actually how the second child that I had was born, because I had an epidural, and once you have the first, the second one comes a little bit easier. And I was like, can we just get the show on the road? Mm-hmm. And then it was like a 1.5 push situation. She was there. And she was healthy. That was good. What about you, Ryan? You got any good, bad advice or bad, good advice?
Yeah, YOLO. YOLO is terrible advice.
And YOLO for the young people.
You only live once. They didn't say that when I was actually in that age group. They just said things like, enjoy your youth. Enjoy it while you're young. That's terrible advice. It's basically telling young people to commit fully to hedonism in any given moment. Like, if you feel like doing it, you
impulse.
Should do it.
Do yeah. it.
And I think it's honestly older people saying, I regret not doing more crazy, horrible things when I was young because now I can't do them, which is terrible advice.
I look back on my I guess college years. My husband and I got married right out of college. And I feel like I wish I would have like gone more, like not like hedonism type of things, but I, you know, it's like, should I have lived it up more? And then I'm like, I wasn't that person then. If I would have been doing it, it would have been dishonest. It would have been because other people were doing it. You know, I was spending I've always been an old soul, and I was spending my college years trying to get myself ready for a marriage and a family. And my husband certainly was not spending his college years thinking, well, I got to get me a wife and some kids. But I don't know that most college age guys are. Eventually it just happens and you're like, yeah, I think this will work. That's the nicest thing my husband's ever said about me. This'll do.
That'll do.
Well, that's a good point though, because you know, everybody lives with regret. It's not that you can't get to a certain point and regret not doing something or doing something differently, but just don't pass that along to the younger generation and say, do everything.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have regrets no matter what you do. You're going to have regrets when you get older.
Do you have other ones?
I have a sort of a general one related to fatherhood, but if
what
you
is it?
Have a point, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, okay. So there's not one particular thing people told me heading into having my first kids, but guys are notoriously terrible about never telling other guys anything good about parenthood. Like, it's always jokingly negative about, like Katie said, well, you'll never sleep again, or say goodbye to your freedoms, or, you know, things like goodbye to the bedroom and stuff like that. Like, that's what guys say. And they never say any of the positive things about fatherhood.
But is it not just, I mean, in my mind, in my very overly stereotyping the male psyche and the male community, are any guys getting together talking about the wonders of marriage or the wonders of, like, I don't see guys getting together and talking about the great things, the great facets of anything like that in general. That's just, to me, it seems like that's not how they function.
Correct. They don't, especially in groups. But if you have a good friend one-on-one, the conversation may go to your marriage or relationships or fatherhood or something.
So you're saying
like that.
Even in a one-on-one conversation,
even in a one-on-one,
still not that.
It's almost never going to happen. And I don't know why. I think because the things for a dad about being a dad that are good are so intangible that it really takes like a deep conversation to get to those things. And guys don't tend to go to those deep conversations easily. They do sometimes, especially if you're in like church groups and stuff, but it's not common. And I don't remember it ever happening to me. So that's kind of it's a general complaint, I guess. Mm-hmm.
If you were to be that person in the conversation, would it be welcomed?
It would have to be the right situation. I mean, if you're out doing a bachelor party or a diaper party or whatever, like that's not going to happen in those situations. But if you're out having drinks with somebody at a bar and it's 11 o'clock and you've had a couple and you're starting to actually talk about, man, I'm getting kind of afraid about having a kid. That's when it happens, because that does happen. But usually guys just go, yeah, you
yeah,
should
scary.
Be.
Scary.
You
know? How frequently are fathers out 3 drinks in at a bar at 11 o'clock at night to have those conversations?
Before your first kid, you can still
do
that.
Let's move that back to about 7 p.m.
Well, that's true.
And there's 2 Diet Cokes and 1 half-drink and draft beer.
Yeah. And you might be in somebody's basement now because the bars are all closed.
Yeah. Hiding, not dancing together, just in your separate dance zone.
Guys don't go out dancing. Let's be clear.
It's just so... Yeah, well, okay, I'm not going down that road. I just think what I was going to say before is I feel like as far as advice goes, I think people don't generally look for advice. Sometimes you run into I think we're willing to go down the road of trying to do it ourselves before we ask for advice, or maybe you get yourself in a little deeper than you initially would have, maybe before social media, before the saturation of information that we can take in, the Googling of a condition, the situation where you're maybe experiencing something as a parent or as a spouse and you put it in Google. Like, we are more interested in going to technology for advice when if we had those actual person-to-person conversations with people who are important in our life, who have lived the experiences that we're stuck in, that we would probably be better for that. Relying on that human connection more so than... What does WebMD have to say about it? You know what WebMD says? They say that it's probably cancer. That's what WebMD says. Yeah. I have chapped lips. Should I Google this? Oh my gosh!
Like, you got lip cancer.
I didn't know that was possible. Okay, well, I regret looking that up. I mean, just the advice that gets passed around and regurgitated on these strips of paper at, you know, showers, Katie, like what we've experienced. It's funny to compare that to real life. And I've experienced this pregnant, and it's funny to be in your fourth pregnant. Less people are willing to give you advice when you're pregnant with your fourth one. Most of them have like very sympathetic looks towards you. They see you and they're like, oh,
I chose this.
Yeah. Like it's, yeah. The weird and inappropriate questions often do come. But that first pregnancy is, I mean, you were wide-eyed the entire time and everybody is telling you all of these things. And very rarely do those things make you feel better about the situation. My advice to if you see a pregnant woman, and if you know me personally and you do this now, then it doesn't count because I just told you to do this.
Rub the belly.
No, that's a good way to get punched.
Don't do that.
Unless you're Patty McMahon. When you see a pregnant woman and you think that they look beautiful, just tell them you look beautiful. Don't tell them they're glowing because they're going to hear they're sweating, because they probably are. Don't tell them, oh, you look, you, how far along are you? You look like you're such and such weeks, because if they look further than they are, then they feel fat. If they don't look as far as they actually are, then they feel inadequate. Everything goes into a negative connotation, generally speaking. Just tell them they look beautiful. Just tell them they look great and end it there. You don't have to say anything else unless they ask. Let's take a quick break. We can do more of this when we come back. Don't go away.
The Mandalorian's Gina Carano is a person I'd never heard of and resent that I have now. She's some conservative wrestling chick on a show I wouldn't watch if I was in prison. And she made some Nazi analogy. Who doesn't these days? You're like the Nazis is the new I don't like you. It's always okay when Trump's the Nazi. That disqualifies her from marching around in a helmet? By the way, you can't work in Hollywood if you don't believe what we believe. Yeah, in the 50s, that's exactly what the left complained they were being told.
So Bill Maher there talking about cancel culture, about Gina Carano, of course, and The Mandalorian, and Lucasfilm firing her from her position there as Cara Dune, that's her name, right, on The Mandalorian. Yep. And, you know, it's interesting to hear Bill Maher coming out and saying what is so obvious. That's the thing that strikes me when I hear something like that from Bill Maher. He's saying it in such a simple way. It's so obvious. Anybody with common sense between their two ears can understand that when he says, like, who doesn't make Nazi comparisons right now? Everybody does. They're all dumb. It's something that I hope that I never get caught up in doing. I certainly don't agree with simplifying Nazism and the experience that was occurring during the Holocaust as something trivial enough that we could just throw the word around like it's something that's common. I mean, like, I think that's the thing that's the most offensive about it. But it is absolutely ridiculous to presume that only one side of the aisle is doing this. Republicans, Trump supporters, are called Nazis every day. Mm-hmm. And when we do this, it's like, I always want to ask people, like, explain to me what National Socialism is to you. Explain to me what the Nazi Party means to you. Explain to me how, if we had the authoritarian government under Donald Trump, that you were accusing him, you know, when you make allegations, analogies towards Trump, suggesting that he's like Hitler. Do you know what Hitler actually did? Like, do you understand the unprecedented and potentially, as far as I know, unrepeated horror that Adolf Hitler exacted upon an entire nation of people? Do you understand that? Because you simplify Hitler when you make an accusation like that. You trivialize what he did to real people so that you can score a political point on Donald Trump on Twitter? Like, that's what you're doing? And this goes without saying, in the specific instance of Gina Carano, what she said was not likening anybody to Hitler or anybody to Nazism. What she said in her tweet was that before Nazis had the power that they had in Germany, they made the people hate each other. They turned people like you against the person sitting in the cubicle next to you. They turned you against the person in the drive-thru behind you. They turned you against the person in the house next to you. That's how the insanity that is Adolf Hitler and Nazism came to be. That was her point. Should she have made it? That's probably up to her to decide at this point. Was it worth it? That's only a question that she can answer. But to suggest that there isn't a constant drumbeat of trivializing this thing that is the worst atrocity to ever occur on our planet, so that people can score political points, it's happening all the time. But there's only one side of the aisle that gets held accountable for it, which means that we don't actually care about the issue at hand. We just look for opportunities to cancel people. And Bill Maher's right to call that out. It's the same thing as screaming racism all the time. If everything is racist, then essentially nothing becomes racist. When you label giant swaths of people racist because they support a specific politician, you are negating the absolute horror of what racism can actually do when people espouse it towards somebody else, when people look at somebody and say, your skin looks like this, now I know something about you. That's what racism is, and acting upon that, and discriminating upon that. We trivialize all of these things that are so terrible on the altar of political points in Twitter arguments. Isn't that insane? And, you know, to think that you've been on the end of that, there's a possibility you've tossed it right back at somebody and probably didn't go very well for you. It's just an insane culture that we live in right now that is not sustainable. You know, I see Kevin commenting this on the Facebook page. Pedro Pascal, who is the actor who plays The Mandalorian, made similar but arguably worse comparisons beforehand. Katie, has he ever been...
No, he has
not been held accountable, called out,
reprimanded, nothing like that. No, he hasn't. And I said this yesterday, Annie, there's a lot of people that don't know what cancel culture is or don't believe that it exists at all. It's because now there's a new thing on Twitter that it's not cancel culture, it's consequence culture. So I don't know where this came from, but the terminology now that, of course, the left has made up is that it's not cancel culture, it's called consequence culture, because if you do something that's offensive or horrible, then you should have to pay the consequence for it, whether that be losing your job, whether that being you disconnected from your family members anymore. That's what they're turning that into now, especially with this Gina Carano situation. That's all the posts that I saw on Twitter from far left people that I follow was just like, yeah, this is what happens.
So, and that's the interesting thing, too, because if you have to pay the consequence, or if somebody says that you have to, like, atone for the sin that you've committed, there's a power structure there where one side gets to say to the other side, this is what you're going to do. Who sets that power? Mm. Who is giving that power, and who is assuming that power? Who's reinforcing the power to be able to say, this is the consequence for your action? I mean, like, just think about that for a second on a social media feed. Or when it's trumped up on the mainstream media, when the stories get covered and you know, the way that stories are portrayed in the media can very much so slant pro or anti whatever that media entity wants to pose it as. Where does this power structure really come from? I mean, that's an honest question. I don't think I have the answer to it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't be canceled if somebody hasn't succumbed to the power. I mean, the power is always money. If there's not a money situation involved, I mean, that's where the masses they collect themselves and they influence things through financial means. Is it just that the other side's not willing to stand up and offer a counter argument? That might be the case.
That's the other side being conservatives?
No, just in any instance. What, you know, like I can think of everybody who's been canceled here in the last probably, I don't know, year. The people who, like, Gina Carano was canceled before people knew that they could stand up for her. It seems like that happened so fast that the movement, that, you know, the hashtag was developed, people got on that bandwagon so quickly that by the time people could rally behind her, they caved. so fast? Mm-hmm. It's just a very interesting question. Like, where does that power balance get set? And how do we affect that in a positive way? Let's talk to Jim Carafano about immigration when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.